You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With Rod Oram this morning. Kia ora, Rod. How are you today?
Morena, very well. Thank you, Rachel.
It's been a very busy couple of weeks. Let's start with the Electoral Commission's recommendations for reform. This has been a really interesting one. We've seen quite a lot of recommendations come through from this independent panel, including things like lowering the voting age to 16, also lowering the threshold for a party to make it into Parliament to 3.5% of the vote. Amongst other things, what's really stood out to you, and do you sort of like the look of these recommendations? What's your take on it, Rod?
I like them a lot because in each individual one is worthwhile in itself. So, for example, reducing that threshold to 3.5% would mean that a party would need to attract about 100,000 votes to be able to get somebody into Parliament. And I think that's an appropriate kind of hurdle. It's quite a big hurdle, but certainly easier than the 5% now. And what it feels like overall, though, is a collection of really good ideas that has quite a lot of support, but one can only imagine that the current political culture and current political machine is going to shut this down, and we're going to get very little of this get through Parliament. And that's one of the things that worries me, that it's the gatekeepers, i.e. the existing people in Parliament, who have the final say on what changes. Now, I wasn't around in the country when we went through the big debate about proportional representation and moving to MMP, and I'd be fascinated to look back at that and hear from people about how that political debate was held and that achieved, because I think we need that kind of movement to actually get real change.
Now, why is it not popular necessarily with the current parliamentary setup to make some of these reforms or bring in some of these changes?
Well, if you keep the threshold at 5%, for example, you are making it harder for smaller parties to get into Parliament. That would be one obvious thing. Another one is that there is recommendations for very big tightening up on donation rules. So a threshold for disclosure would come down from $15,000 to $1,000. But crucially, only registered voters could donate money, not organisations. Now, that has a big impact on Labour because it gets a fair chunk of its money from unions. But it would have also, in the last election, had a huge impact on Te Pāti Māori. They would have, if the rules were proposed or in place, would have been short $350,000 because most of the money they received for the election last time came from John Tamaheri. And so that was way over any kind of threshold that might be introduced. So I think those are some of the examples of why the entrenched political culture will be reluctant to change much.
What about the other one? I was just going to say, what about the four-year term suggestion? What do you think about that one?
That's exactly the subject I was going to move on to.
Nice.
Yes, thank you. Because I think it's essentially irrelevant whether you have three-year terms or four. You can either argue it either way, but it is still relatively short-term. What is far more interesting, and I can only point to a few examples around the world where this has worked, is that there is a very broad and strong general public consensus about what the country is trying to achieve, short, medium, and long term. And therefore, each election becomes a referendum, if you like, on the incumbent party's ability to deliver on that. So you don't have this to-ing and fro-ing on positions as governments change. So to me, that's the real high ground of democracy one would need to get to. But that requires a very substantial public participation and rather than just sort of turning up to vote once every 3 or 4 years and having a bit of a moan in the meantime. And so the biggest disappointment for me in the report is there is not a single mention of participatory democracy. So these are things like citizens' assemblies and other forms of democratic direct participation, which other countries are developing, some other countries are developing, and are very effective. And the only time the term democratic participation was mentioned. One reference in the whole report, and it's 350 pages or so, was a reference to reducing the voting age to 16, that would encourage younger people to participate.
Yeah.
But that is such a traditional view of democracy. And I think that the this is only a draft report. There's hopefully, although I doubt they would add this big item to the agenda, potentially the opportunity in the final report, due to be handed to the next government, whoever that might be leading that in late November, to add that, have a big thrust on participatory democracy, because it's about getting people involved in the democratic process beyond just turning up to vote once every 3 or 4 years.
Mm. It's certainly a really interesting collection of suggestions, or recommendations, I should say. It's a stronger word than suggestions. And yeah, it will be very interesting to see what happens, but I sort of tend to feel anxious in the same way that you do, Rod, that this perhaps might not get through those early stages at the moment. But let's talk about local government now. It's a big day for Auckland Council. There's another meeting between councillors and the mayor to try and decide what to do, particularly about the airport shares, is the real hot button topic at the moment. The last meeting, the public one, with members of the public and journalists invited, was another sort of example of Wayne Brown perhaps being combative in his stance on this. What's your predictions for today? Also, what would you like to see come out of this?
It's very hard to predict because there are 20 councillors, and so the mayor is going to have to assemble majorities on each of the elements of the budget proposal in order to get the whole package through. He has made it very clear that selling the airport shares is absolutely non-negotiable on his part, and it's still not clear whether there's a majority, judging by kind of straw polls other people have been doing. It's not entirely clear that he's got a majority for that. So that's why the meeting, which is I'm going to be going along to, it's just going to be fascinating to watch, could be really quite fraught. Not the least of which, because he's clearly a person who lacks the personal skills and the political skills to be able to persuade. You know, he lectures. You know, anybody who doesn't agree with him is, he says, is financially illiterate. You know, that's the sort of level at which he tries to bulldoze through his views.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's going to be completely fascinating. There is a very hard stop to all this in that the government, council's new financial year starts July 1st. And by law, it can't spend a single cent of money if it doesn't have a budget.
Mm.
And so the next 6 weeks or so could be quite protracted. But on the other hand, already exhaustion might have set in to varying degrees and some sort of compromise is agreed. I'm afraid I just can't predict this one at all.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see what happens for sure. Last thing to touch on this morning is having a little bit of a look at what's going on in the National Party. You're interested in what we might see come out of National at the moment, particularly when it comes to He Waka Eke Noa, which is the Farm Emissions Working Group set up by the government at the moment. What are your predictions or I guess, concerns around this area?
Well, there are reports from very reliable journalistic sources that National is going to walk away from He Waka Eke Noa. Now, to a large extent, the government already has. So Hipkins, as Prime Minister, has not been anywhere near as enthusiastic about trying to keep making that work, although it's horribly deadlocked and stalemated, than Jacinda Ardern was. And so we do know it's going to be announcing an agricultural policy on climate in due course, possibly sooner rather than later. And I would be surprised if it really grappled with the issue rather than just trying to ameliorate the existing situation. And there is already a track record in this for National because earlier this week, Luxon was giving a major speech at an infrastructure conference in Christchurch. And it was all about building more roads and freeways, and he used the word freeway, which was kind of interesting. There was barely a reference to to climate at all.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when you compare that in England, in the UK, where the Infrastructure Commission there is supposed to do a report, a strategy report, once every 5 years, it's doubling back in half that time to produce a new report on its extended strategy, absolutely focused on how infrastructure has to be very substantially changed, repurposed, redirected to meet the challenges of getting to net zero, but meeting the challenges of resilience. And there wasn't a single word, sorry, I've been slightly unkind, there was a few passing comments about resilience, but there was nothing of any substance there on climate at all. So that's infrastructure, and the built environment's very big in this, and I would expect National to be equally as disengaged on climate when it comes to agriculture, even though farmers are 49% of our total emissions.
Oh, crikey. It's going to be a big, a bit of a messy one this year, I reckon, going into the old election around these particular topics. Rod, thank you so much for your time this morning. Be really interested to hear your thoughts after today's meeting with Auckland Council. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, but take care until then. Thank you so much.
Thanks. See ya.
See ya.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.